Welcome to the Legacies Podcast, everyone. I'm Sarah, your host, coffee lover, historian, and most importantly, an entrepreneur. For our first episode, I'm sitting down with Nico Blitz, a proud Filipino DJ with iHeartRadio and owner of The Lunch Table. In 2017, Nico and I connected over a simple tweet, and he was the first person to give me a shot in the music business as a writer. So this episode is really special to me, and I cannot wait for you guys to hear it. During our conversation, we deep dive into our love for rap and how it really shaped both of our lives, from teaching us about other cultures to how to get our feet wet within the industry. Nico also shares some great advice with y'all on not rushing your passion, but instead keep growing with every accolade that's thrown your way. And today's episode is sponsored by Cooper's Cast Coffee. Imported from around the world, Cooper's brings the adventure right back into your morning brew. From rich chocolate flavors of Sumatra to fresh lemon scents from Ethiopia, you can try all of them with Cooper's Single Origin Coffee subscription box to find your favorite flavor. And right now, listeners can grab 10% off their first order by heading to coopers.99stclair.com and creating an account. All right, that's it. Let's dive into our first episode with Nico Blitz. Welcome back to the Legacies Podcast, everybody. I am Sarah, your host, and today we have an amazing friend of mine, Nico Blitz, DJ, writer, and owner of The Lunch Table. How are you?
Come on, Sarah. I'm doing well. You know, we're running on California time right now. I got the eye bags and whatnot, but we're good to go.
That's good. You know what? Tiredness means you're doing good stuff, right?
Yeah. You know what's funny is that literally just yesterday, somebody had told me that yawning is actually bad for you.
Really?
Yeah, because, I mean, it indicates tiredness, obviously, but then it could, and sleep deprivation, but then it could also indicate that you have, like, heart problems, so on and so forth. And I'm like, well, I don't think I have any heart problems right now, but that's good to know for the future. I think it's just sleep deprivation at this point.
Oh my goodness, that's crazy. Well, you work a lot. And before we really get into it, let's kind of rewind to the very beginning. Let's talk about what it was like growing up as a Filipino kid in the Bay.
Damn, that's a crazy question. Well, for one, I remember growing up and thinking everyone was Filipino because everyone in my parents' circle was Filipino. And once I got to, I think, middle school, when I started to notice, oh, there's like Black people, there's white people, there's Hispanic people. I'm like, oh, the world is extremely big. But I will say, like, even in high school too, like, I just mainly hung around like Filipinos because we were so like-minded. And it wasn't until high school where this is actually where the birth of The Lunch Table started. I just didn't even realize that it was happening. But like, when me and my friends would get together at the lunch table, I went to an all-boys high school called Archbishop Burton High School. No girls, no distractions is what they were trying to tell us, right? It was like, it was some weird shit. But we would sit down at the table every day and just get to know each other on a more personal level. And I found myself through there just really enjoying having interpersonal conversations with people. Like, there wouldn't be a moment where we'd just be talking about, like, the bullshit weather or the bullshit, like, happening on a daily basis. We would literally just be, like, communicating with each other just as dudes, just as, like, friends, and be like, yo, da-da-da, like. And I think my life growing up in San Francisco was very, it was very normal. You know, like, one thing that not a lot of people know about me, too, is that I grew up in a more, I guess, middle-class environment. You know, like, my mom works for Bain & Company, which is one of the biggest merger companies in the world.
I had no idea. I feel like I don't know anything about your personal life, which is why I wanted you on the podcast, because we're all hip-hop all the time.
Yeah, I mean, my parents' background's kind of crazy. Like, so my mom, she moved here when she was about 5 years old. And she, as I said, she works for a Bain & Company, still does. My dad moved here probably about my current age now, like 26, 27 years old. And he used to work for Salinas Valley Prison.
Wow.
So I would get a mixture between like the corporate world and the government world, like just clashed into one. And I would look at both situations like, damn, like, you know, my parents are really doing everything they can just to make sure that me and my younger sister, Sabrina, are – know, happy and cool. Like, you know, I'll say out loud, like, I've never been in a position where money has been like an issue.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's literally just the background that I come from.
But I think it's interesting because you grew up in a very similar environment to me where you really didn't know about other color and other culture until a very older age. And I feel like that's one thing that reason why we connect with hip hop so well is because it literally introduced us to an entirely different world that's literally in our backyard.
Dude, tell me about it. Like, I think when I finally got introduced to hip hop and, you know, being in the Bay Area, we had hyphy music. If you don't know what hyphy music is, it was basically this era in the Bay Area where, you know, it really put on the map people like E-40, Keek the Sneak, Clyde Carson, probably, you know, the latter half probably names that people have never really heard of, but are very icons in the Bay Area. And so once I discovered hip hop through people like E-40 and all of them, I was like, yo, like not only is the Bay Area bigger, but then the world is fucking huge. I didn't know, like, you know, that literally introduced me to the Lil Johns of the world. Yeah. You know, that introduced me to the Young Jeezys of the world. And I'm like, yo, like, now you're telling me that there are people from different regions of the United States who are doing the exact same thing that we're doing in the Bay Area. Like, that's really fucking cool. And hip hop kind of expanded my brain in that sense of like, wow, like, you know, people really come from the gutter, mm-hmm. you know, just to actually do this shit and make a living off this shit. And I've never said this out loud, but when I think about it, I think being from like a middle class family, I've always wanted to know, like, damn, like, what is that struggle really like? Because I really enjoy hip hop music, and all the hip hop music that I listen to comes from a certain struggle, right? So I've always been infatuated with, so what is that really like for all these people living like that, you know?
And I feel the exact same way because I have a parent incarcerated. My dad's been in prison for, I don't know, like 11 years almost now. And for me, I felt very similar to how you feel, is like, even though I grew up kind of in a fucked up situation, like, I was so far removed from all of that, that like, I didn't know really what it meant to struggle. I didn't realize that like people that have parent incarcerated is like a normal thing, especially being from Cleveland. Like, I am a walking cliche of people from Cleveland, but I had no idea. And when I started listening to people that grew up down the block from me, like Bone Thugs and Harmony and Kid Cudi and MGK and all of these people, like, it's like, holy shit, this is real. Like, this is real life. And it's not some like Disney Channel fantasy that we're living. It's hard and it's gritty. But I feel like that's why I've started, and you know, I found hip hop probably in the fifth grade. Like, my, embarrassingly enough, like, my first ever hip hop song was that song with Eminem, with D40, that My Band song or whatever.
D12, yeah.
Yeah, D12.
Don't even know the name of my band.
Exactly. That was like the first hip hop song I ever heard, but it just like opened up all this like whole new world for me. And I finally felt with hip hop like I was becoming a holistic person that I wasn't going to find in a college room, or I wasn't going to find in the white Catholic school I went to. You know, I feel like it makes you more colorful when you can listen to music, and maybe you're necessarily not like fully engulfed into that lifestyle, but you get it and you're empathetic because of it, you know?
Well, you know, for me, I'm the type of person who loves inclusivity. You know, like, if I'm at a party and I bring somebody with me, I'm like, yo, like, you know, like, this is my homie or this is my friend. And I want to make sure that everybody's kind of like together, right? Mm-hmm. So I think living in the Bay Area where, Like the first hip hop song that really had me inspired to just like have fun and just like, you know, be the type of person who I am right now, which is like outgoing, energetic, just straight up hyphy, was probably Tell Me When to Go.
Okay.
By E-40. And that's a song that a lot of people know, right? And to me, like, from the music video to having like people like Lil Jon and like a whole bunch of people in the background, just like, you know, going crazy and whatnot, I was like, yo, like, this is the type of energy that I want to bring to everywhere that I go, like the inclusivity, like the the high profile, high energy, persona, like that's the type of shit that really makes me feel like, wow, like hip hop can really do this for people. Hip hop can really bring people together. And that's essentially the essence as to why, like, I really love hip hop. Like, it really brings people closer together. I mean, unfortunately, we have the situations where, you know, like hip hop concerts get shot up, so on and so forth. I don't really want to get into that, but like the fact that music like that could bring people together and make people feel like they've known each other for such a long time because they relate to this one song or two songs or album or artist, like nothing outside of hip hop gives me that feeling.
And I feel like that is a great segue, because that inclusivity, I always felt that from the get-go that I met you, is, you know, with me being a white kid in hip hop, like I am the underdog and I'm okay with that. But you were really the first person that was like, it's okay. Like, you still can sit with us. We're the cool kids and you are still a cool kid regardless of your skin color. And that I've always really appreciated about you. And more so on that side with the lunch table, you're very focused on people who aren't necessarily known. Like you've always, from the get-go, from the moment I've known about Lunch Table, it's like, it's all about the underground hip hop and the people that are making the moves to get to the place of E-40 and all of West Coast rap, right? But so obviously, like, the idea of the Lunch Table came to you pretty early, but when did you really start thinking about having a career in music? What did that first step look like for you?
So back in the Bay Area, I was a little stupid ass. You know, there were opportunities for me to do internships with some of the biggest radio hosts in the Bay Area. But at that point in time, you know, after I graduated from high school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I ended up going to community college for 3 years, and I ended up just taking like a whole bunch of like newspaper classes. And I was like, yeah, you know, I think I'm interested in this. I think I'm interested in media in some facet, right? And then it wasn't until I moved to Los Angeles when I went to Cal State LA. And I remember the first day I walked on campus, I just heard like some hip hop music in the background. I'm like, I'm going wherever the fuck that is, right? I'm going right there. And it was this radio station called Golden Eagle Radio. With that radio station, they basically gave me a shot at being on their station. But they didn't give it to me instantly. They gave it to me probably like a year and some change afterwards. And to be honest, I wasn't even on like a hip hop tip. I wasn't even doing the Lunch Table when I first hopped on the radio. I was the type of dude in college where I was just so obsessed with like working out and whatnot. Like, so my first segment on the radio was actually called The Gains Time. And it was just like a cool like 5 minute segment of me just like, yo, this is the type of workout that I'm doing today. And so one of my right, and then it just evolved. One of my homies was like, hey, like, you know, there's not necessarily like a hip-hop segment for our radio station, would you be down to do this? And I'm like, yeah, I'd be down. So we recorded a demo back in my old apartment in downtown LA, and he was like, what do you want to call it? And I was thinking to myself, and the group chat that I already had on my phone with all my friends from back in the Bay, I was like, why don't we call it the Lunch Table?
That's crazy.
You know?
Right.
Why don't we call it the Lunch Table? My group chat on my phone was already called the Lunch Table. I was like, dude, let's just call it the Lunch Table. He was like, yo, like, I like that. And, you know, I broke down the idea, like, as I mentioned earlier, and he was just with it. So then we started doing that show probably in May 2015, I believe, May 2015. And my co-host, he ended up having to like hop off the show. So January 20th, 2016 is when I actually consider the birth of the Lunch Table, because I ended up taking a class at Cal State LA, and it was like, hey, make a website just based off whatever you want to do. So I was like, okay, it would only make sense because I've already been doing the Lunch Table radio show for a couple months. Why don't I just make a blog? Because, you know, like, I grew up like watching, or, you know, like looking up hip hop blogs, like Two Dope Boys and all that. And I was like, yo, like, I can do that. And so January 20th, 2016, I remember writing about Kanye West's new song at the time, No More Parties in LA. And that was the first blog post that I ever did. And then afterwards, it just ended up evolving into like, oh, okay, well, not only can I do blog posts, but I can interview artists too. And it wasn't even in the criteria of what my professor wanted me to do. He was just like, why are you doing this? And I'm just like, I don't know. I just figured I could do stuff like this. Like, something's just telling me, just go ahead and like interview artists. He's like, you know, you're not getting credit for this, right? And I'm like, I know, but I mean, if it's a website that I'm going to be carrying on later, like, you know, why not? He's like, all right, cool. Dude, and I just ended up interviewing like small ass artists, like people that you wouldn't even like recognize by their name. And then I found like a little purpose in it. Like, dude, like I can really be that guy who just like puts people on to like new ass artists. And I think what really got me high was a couple of my first interviews after that were with more noticeable artists over here in the West Coast, right? So I had people like Eric Bellinger, for example. I had people like Bobby Brackens. He made that, if you guys don't know Bobby Brackens, he made that song 143, I love you. He made that song. And on top of that, I had people like Big Lenbo, who was part of a Logic's camp.
Yes.
And so at an early stage, acquiring those people as interviewees on year one, I was like, yo, like, I'm kind of getting a high off of this, you know, because not only am I talking to people who I've been noticing from afar for a long ass time, but they all came back with good feedback. Like, yo, like you're asking like really solid questions. Like I never like got asked this before. Like for instance, Eric Bellinger, for example, his grandfather is actually Bobby Day. Bobby Day was a songwriter for the Jackson 5. If you know Eric Bellinger's roots, Eric Bellinger has song written for Justin Bieber, Usher,
and that's Chris how I feel Brown. Like a lot of people in the game start out is that they're getting their music on other people's albums, and then they're, you know, finally making a name for themselves, and it's like, oh, this new artist, it's like, no, he's been in the game for so long, and he needs so much more credit. Just like Big Lenbo, like, I've seen him open for Logic, God, probably like 4 times, and people still don't know who he is, and it's like, his music's so much better than Logic's, personal opinion aside, but, you know, because it's like, it's, I feel like, when you know, one thing with the underdogs and the newcomers is like that fame and that like popularity isn't there yet. And it's just about the music, you know, just like with you and interviewing newcomers, it's like for you, it's just about the interview. It's not about trying to make it to be the Charlamagne and the Joe Budden, because you're appreciating the smaller steps you have to take to get there.
Mm-hmm. And, What really got me high, actually, and this is how I'm going to tie everything, what really got me high was when I did interview Big Lenbo, and I was talking to his manager, aka Logic's manager. Shout out to Surfstar Chris. But I was like, hey, man, like, why did you decide to, you know, come to the lunch table? And he was like, well, honestly, it was between you and Hot New Hip Hop Today.
Okay.
And I was just quiet.
That's crazy. Because they, well, I guess they were pretty big back then still, right? Because you're saying this is 2016 now.
This was, at this point, it was when Logic did his Everybody tour, I believe.
Oh, wow. Okay, so this is like early 2017 almost.
Yeah, this is early 2017.
Wow.
And so, you know, I was just kind of stunned. I was like, you mean to tell me you chose the lunch table over Hot New Hip Hop? Fuck yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And you know, that moment stuck out to me at like the early stages because I'm like, wow, like somebody who I see, like, I guess over here, like at the top, looks at me and there's like that mutual respect level. And so for me, when it comes to interviewing people, I used to be kind of thirsty and want to be like, yo, you know, like I kind of got like number obsessed at one point, because I'm like, damn, like, you know, like I love interviewing these artists. I love everybody who I've had on the lunch table. But there was always a part of me that was like, but fuck, dude, like, I want these numbers to go up. I want this to go up. I want that to go up. And it wasn't necessarily translating the way I was hoping it would be. And even still to this day, like, I'll still get like interviews that get like 200 views, 300 views. But I think what really helped me out was recognizing that these are all relationships that I'm forming for the greater good for later on, you know? And I feel like the same way I believe in these artists and they believe in me, I believe that somebody who I see like way bigger, if they believe in me in that same way, then there's that mutual respect level. So I'm always seeking that mutual respect level between like me and the artist, like no matter who it is. Like now I'm at the point where, okay, if you like, you can have like 500,000 followers, right? But if you're coming at me at like the wrong way, it's like, I'm cool. I don't really want to fuck with you because I don't really dig your energy right now.
Hey friend, I wanted to pop into this episode quickly and ask how you're doing. As a first-time business owner, things can get pretty lonely. And if you're like me, you're probably feeling a tad overwhelmed trying to figure out what you should be learning and when. Well, close your Google search tabs and step away from the endless blog posts on Pinterest because I'm here to personally invite you to join the new online space that's helping people around the world learn, launch, and grow their businesses. Club 99 is our digital speakeasy, where entrepreneurs are engaging in weekly brainstorming chats, monthly workshops, and even taking courses like email marketing to support their journey. By becoming a member, you'll not only be surrounded by people who get it, but you'll also be free of those webinars that haven't been helping you. And guess what? It gets better. When you join Club 99 today, you'll receive 20% off your first month's membership. All you have to do is enter Legacy20 when creating your account. We're here and we're ready to make your business a showstopper. So what are you waiting for? Become a member today of the most exclusive place on the internet by heading to www.99stclair.com/club99. And don't forget to use that amazing discount. Just type in Legacy20 at checkout. Now, back to the show. And I feel like that's what some people I think tend to forget is that we all started down here and it's, you know, everybody's got to take those steps forward. And if you're not willing to pay it backwards and say like, dude, I was in your spot, like not even like necessarily like you deserve a shot, but like I see you grinding enough that you should have the respect just like I was given and I need to pay that forward. I think that that's what keeps people going so much longer than just like, fuck, this is so hard. Like the grind is so hard. Like how are people like doing it? And really at the end of the day, it's about who you know and how you show respect to artists and people and journalists, just like they show it back to you.
I've found that, the first opportunity isn't necessarily the last opportunity. So for instance, right, literally just yesterday on, you know, the day after the Lunch Table's 4-year anniversary, I've been working on this, on trying to get this interview for about 3 years. So the interview that I had was with Pilo. If you don't know Pilo, he's this Filipino-American rapper from the Bay Area. I'm Filipino American from the Bay Area. So it's like, how much more relevant could that?
It's like a mirror relevancy.
Yeah, right. And you know, he's really big over here on the West Coast. And I told him on the podcast, I was like, hey man, I remember meeting you about 3 years ago. It was at the first Complex Con. I was feeling sick as fuck. Like my eyes were crazy. Like they were more crazier than how my eyes look right now. And I was like, hey, bro, you know, like I'm a huge fan of your music. I'd love to interview you one day. And then I told that to him on the podcast. He's like, you know what? I remember that little moment now. I remember now. I was like, all right, cool, cool. And to me, a part of me was still very thirsty. Like, dude, like, what if I don't get this interview right now? Da, 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 whoop-de-whoop. But then I let it go. I completely let it go. And then working at Real 92.3 over here at the radio station, I ended up linking with Pilo so many times this year. And let me see if I can like break down all these little moments. He'd show up at the radio station just to promote a song. He'd be like, hey, what's up? I'm still here. Me and him met backstage at the 88 Rising Festival. 88 Rising it's a record label that holds like Rich, Brian, Nicki, Joji, so on and so forth. It's a huge, like, I will just say it's a huge Asian record label. So I saw Pilo back then and I was like, hey, do you mind just doing like 3 minutes with me? He's like, yeah, I got you. And then I end up doing this Filipino-American basketball game over here at Staples Center. I played basketball with him. And then I run back to him at the radio station again. And then I run into his manager over at a club that I was at. And he was just like, damn, Nico, like, you're kind of everywhere, bro. Like, it's really hard to not fuck with you.
Right?
I'm like, I don't know, bro.
I'm not following you, I promise.
Yeah. And then his manager, Calais, he was just like, hey, bro, like, I'd really love to get Pilo on your podcast. I'm like, cool, let's do it. And by the time he got here, like, I was recollecting myself from the first day I met him, and I was like, damn, I was so thirsty just to interview this guy. But now everything is just calm. It's cool. He's already comfortable with me. And this was an interview that I had 3 years in the making.
Even though it took a while, like, you built up so much stamina until then that, like, you nailed this interview because you were ready for it. It's not like you were just like, oh, my God, I want the next best person on, and not realizing you weren't ready for it.
And I think you make a really good point, because I wasn't ready 3 years ago. I was thirsty 3 years ago. I thought I was ready 3 years ago, but I wasn't, truly. And I think that solidified in my head that everything is just about timing and persistence and, as you said, stamina. Like, there's that mutual respect, because Pilo has been doing his thing for probably a decade now. You know what I mean? The Lunch Table has been around for 4 years.
Right. And in business years, that's 4 years is nothing, I feel like.
It's nothing. That you're not even, your feet isn't even in the pool yet.
Right. You have not dived into the deep end.
But I think what tends to happen is that people who are trying to start their podcast or trying to be like an entertainment personality, they tap out before anything good can even happen. You know, I think it's good to have like little reminders to yourself, like the big Lembos of the world, you know, like having little reminders like, yo, like what you're doing is really dope. And, you know, obviously having support from like your family and friends, which I have had for the past 4 years, and I'm extremely grateful for that. But I think people get so obsessed seeing like No Jumper, who can literally just have anybody in the world and then the views are just going to run up like crazy. Or you can see people who hop on like Lyrical Lemonade and just become like instant celebrities overnight. I think that instantaneous, that instant gratification is what fucks with people's heads. So I do my best to just block out all the instant gratification that comes right. My way.
When you're first starting out, I feel like it's really easy to get caught up in what you were just saying about like the quick turn of success, because I feel like I was on that same pathway, whether it was positive or negative, because I, just like you, I had taken a music class and was asked to start a blog, and I picked a topic. I talked about, I think it was like racism in hip hop, and it was a logic line that I had found about him being biracial. I didn't know that he was biracial. For anyone who's curious, I had no idea when I first started this project, but I was maybe 3 or 4 blog posts in and had randomly tweeted Charlemagne the God my piece that I had written. And I didn't even tweet directly at him. I had like thrown it into his Twitter feed, and he literally retweeted me like 20 minutes later. And it's like, holy shit, if I can literally do this and have no experience and have this massive celebrity retweeting me, like what else can I achieve? And I felt like, dissimilarly, you know, not understanding what it takes to make those small steps to longevity like you've done, that I spent about a year sitting on this high horse of like, I'm untouchable. I can be on anything. Like at that point I had gotten Shea Serrano to retweet my work and it's like, yeah, it's a tweet, but like it made such a big move. And so when you saw my tweet and had reached out to me, I was like, oh my God, someone wants me to write for them. Like they believe in me so much that I can literally write for them, which was such a crazy idea. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to write about. Like I think my first piece for Lunch Table was about Machine Gun Kelly, which I'm so embarrassed about now. But it's like, I feel like you respected so much so about what it means to grind and work hard. And it was so nice for me to prove to you were not wrong about choosing me. And like, I wrote so much for Lunch Table and some of my like proudest writing came on your platform. I'm so appreciative of you like all the time because you literally opened floodgates for me of it was okay to be a white kid in hip hop, even though people in my neighborhood were very much not telling me that it was okay, you know?
I think it's that essence as to why like the same way I see and believed in like what you were doing is the same way that I see and believe in like the, you know, all these artists who I do end up like enjoying and like interviewing on my platform. Because I think for you being a suburban white kid currently living in Texas, right?
The whitest liberal city in Austin.
You know what I mean? Like you're already put into a box. Yep. People want to put you into a box so quickly. For me, being a Filipino American in the Bay Area, I'm also put into that box too. I'm put into the box where, okay, well, so you're Filipino, so you're obviously gonna want to be in like the nursing and the nursing system and whatnot. And I'm like, yeah, I'm all right.
I'm good. I am okay.
You know what I mean? And to me, it's crazy talking to like my 16-year-old cousins, 15-year-old cousins and asking them like, hey, like, what do you really want to do in life? And they tell me like, well, my mom wants me to be a nurse. My mom wants me to work in the medical field. And I was on the phone with them and I'm like, yo, fuck that. Mm-hmm.
Seriously, there's so much more. There's so much more in the world.
There's so much more. Like now I'll have my cousins like hitting me up like with that Pilo interview that I just posted. Like they hit me up like, damn, you're famous now. I'm like, no, I'm not famous. I'm just doing my job.
Exactly.
I'm doing exactly what I want to do and everything that I like manifested out loud. And to me, one of my driving pieces, for example, right? Like why I really want to do what I want to do is that having conversations like that with my younger family members, there's no way I can tell them you can do everything that you want to do. And I'm not like the living, breathing persona of that. You know what I mean? Like, how can I tell them like, hey, do whatever the fuck you want to do, but I'm over here like tapping out. It gives me that motivation like, yo, Nico, don't tap out. Otherwise you're going to be a hypocrite to your younger like family members.
I mean, I don't think that makes you a hypocrite. I think that we are lucky that in 2020, success looks so different, regardless of what angle you look at it at. And one person I feel like really is that kind of showcases that is you interviewed him. And he was also on Rhythm and Flow. If y'all have not seen Rhythm and Flow on Netflix, it is an amazing hip hop competition that's hosted by T.I., Chance the Rapper, and Cardi B. And Nico, you were able to interview one of the contestants, Old Man Saxon, who I feel like from the get-go was labeled as this underdog because he was older than everybody else. He wasn't your traditional rapper hip hop guy because he's not a kid. But what was that like to see someone reaching success the way that Saxon has in that conversation you had with him? And just to, you know, again, reflecting on younger kids of what they can achieve no matter what.
Well, let me reiterate on the mutual respect thing. So the DJ who was on Rhythm and Flow, his name is DJ Head. I literally work with him every single day at Real 92.3. And if I hadn't been doing the Lunch Table for, at that point, like 3.5 years or whatever, I had asked him, like, hey, Head, like, is there any way you can, like, link me with Old Man Saxon? He was like, for what, lunch table? I'm like, yeah. He's like, all right, I got you. Linked us via phone, and then I basically had to do the rest. Like, yo, Saxon, like, I got this day open. I got this day open when you free. He's like, yeah, I got you. Like, let's just, like, line it up and whatnot. And what was really cool about that conversation with Old Man Saxon, who had already been doing his music thing for a decade, he was telling me, like, yo, but the rhythm and flow shit, that's just the beginning. This is literally just, after a decade later, you're telling me you're just in the beginning of your entire process? And he's like, yeah, bro, because that's just one piece of the puzzle. That's just one piece of the story. Like, everything that I was doing before then, like, I feel like I'm still doing now. The only difference is that it was put on, like, such a big stage. And, you know, to me, I feel like Old Man Saxon could have gone a lot farther. But if even if you look at him compared to the rest of the contestants, look at the two people who I thought should have made it to the end were D Smoke and Old Man Saxon. Well, guess what? Both of them are in their 30s. You mean to tell me everybody else who was like in their mid-20s and even younger, they just weren't ready for that that same opportunity that Saxon and D Smoke were. That even more so made me feel like, what the fuck is the rush for?
Exactly. D Smoke in particular, like, he took every note to the T, and like, you could tell he was an academic before he was a rapper because he did the work that he needed to do. Whereas like Old Man Saxon, he is that like true creator that beats his own drum, follows his own drum, but does it so well. And I think those two things combined is what makes real successful people, is that they listen to their gut and they're their own unique person. And I feel like it's really easy to lose one or both of those things based on, you know, what audiences are saying or tweets are saying or people listening to radio shows that call in and complain all the time, you know? Like, it's so easy to lose that.
And most importantly, too, I think that the only reason why they've been able to know how to maneuver through this game so much, like, whether it be, like, from the tweets or from, like, the hate over the internet, so on and so forth, is literally, it just comes down to experience. Imagine having a decade's worth of experience, right? It's like, okay, well, I already know I shouldn't be doing this because it's going to lead me down that way. Okay, I already know I shouldn't be going on YouTube and reading all the hate comments because maybe you get depressed off of it, you know? Because people on the internet are brutal. My point being is that I think what tends to happen is that we see 16, 17, 18-year-olds pop off. But unfortunately, what happens after that is a lot of them get into the drug side of it because they don't know how the fuck to maneuver through everything because everything's just coming at them so fast. If we think about when I'm 26, if I think about where my headspace was 18 years ago, like, I was a little stupid ass. Like, I didn't know anything about life, and life wasn't coming at me that fast like the way you know, life is coming at, like, the Lil Pumps or, like, the Lil Xans of the world. You know, life isn't coming at me that quick. So I kind of knew how to just, like, maneuver through what little space I had. So if you think about Old Man Saxon and D Smoke, it's like, dude, they had so much time to figure out their sound, figure out how to get past the hate, figure out how to get through the trials and tribulations, not through a record label, not through somebody else like feeding them hella money, but just going, like, Old Man Saxon was homeless for about a year or some change. Like, bruh, he was living out his car.
Look at the progress he made, though, you know? And I feel like a lot of people will look at it and be like, well, he didn't win, so there's no success there. And it's like, dude, look at how many followers he has now. Like, look at what he's doing. And again, like you said, like, it's literally a stepping stone. And in business and in passion projects, I feel like it's really easy to get discouraged if you can't find those stepping stones and actually, like, at the end of the day, be like, even though this wasn't a really big win, it still is going to carry me so much farther than what maybe, like, the public looking in sees, right?
And I think that people see these stepping stones more so as the greatest accolades that they can achieve. I think when you see something like rhythm and flow as like the end all thing, then you literally just fucked yourself over. If I saw myself interviewing Eric Bellinger, Bobby Brackens, P-Lo, Big Lembo as like the end all thing, it's like I'm fucking myself over because there's so much more than just that one interview, that one moment. You know, something that T.I. said at the end of Rhythm and Flow, and he told this to D Smoke, he said, the feeling that you're feeling right now, that you won, you're going to be chasing this high forever. And I like, that's the one absolute thing that I took from the entire show. Like, damn, we look at all these accolades and then we just like we acquire these accolades and then we just stop. Because we're just like, we're the shit. The same way you were talking about like, oh, I got retweeted by Shay Serrano. I got retweeted by Charlamagne. Like after that, the regular person would just stop and be like, yeah, I'm cool now. It's like, nah, bruh, there's so much more work that needs to be done.
Exactly. And I feel like even in those accolades, like the piece that I got, you know, my accolades from, I've literally rewritten that piece like four times since it's gone public, because it's like, I have so much more to improve on and do better on. And, you know, I think that life just, you know, it can get away from you so quickly if you're not engaged with not only your mind, but also like your passion and what you love, because it's going to just slip away so quickly if you're not in tune and allowing yourself to grow authentically and organically with that quote unquote like river, right? If you're not just letting the river take you by, then there's literally not going to be anything there for you to succeed from, you know? So that is a great, great stopping point. Nico, thank you for being on The Legacies. I really appreciate it. Do you want to plug anything before we cut the mics?
Oh, of course. You know, youtube.com/thelunchtable. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. As of right now, I think we're at 11K. We grew from like 1,000 to 10,000 in a year. So I'm happy with that shit. Go do that. We got new interviews with for the hip hop heads. We got interviews with XV, Ritz. For the Bay Area cats, we got Miles Parrish. We got P-Lo. We got Haiti Baby. Just check all the interviews out, man, because that's what's really important to me, that you check out these interviews and hopefully pick up a gem from each and every one of them. Also follow us on Instagram at The Lunch Table.
Yes, make sure that you follow them on The Lunch Table, because Nico goes live all the time and talks about music, and it's pretty great. We will put all of those links down in the show notes for you, so don't think that you have to memorize or write them down, because they will be there forever. And thanks, Nico, for coming on. Super appreciative of you, as always.
Hey, thank you for having me on the first episode, Sarah. Absolutely. Well, let me just say this, too. Like, Sarah is one of the most hardworking people I know. She thinks I'm a crazy hip-hop head. She's put me on to, like, hella people. And, like, I'm like, yo. Sarah's really the plug. If y'all think I'm the plug, Sarah's actually the plug. Just FYI.
I'm the Texas plug. Nico's the California plug.
Amen to that.
As always, if you loved this podcast, make sure to rate, review, subscribe anywhere that you listen to this podcast. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, everywhere. And if you love it, make sure to tell your friends, take a screenshot, throw it up on your Instagram stories. I'm always hanging out online, and let me know what you're pursuing, what your business is about, because I want to be able to help you in any way possible. And we will see you in the next episode. Have an amazing week. The Legacies Podcast is a production of 99 in St. Clair and is currently recorded in Austin, Texas. If you'd like to be a guest on our show or learn more about how to get involved, visit www.99stclair.com/podcast for more information. As always, thanks for listening.